What's up, ladies and gentlemen? Johnny Mac here. Just wanted to give you a heads up that if you are looking for a community that is open to discussion as far as mentorship, conservation, the wild, becoming a better person, and all of that, there is a group for you on Facebook, and it is called Soul Seekers. Soul Seekers, we are all about making ourselves a better person. We're all about making sure hunting lasts for generations to come and encouraging people to get plugged in. Whether you are someone who has something to give or someone who needs to soak it up like a sponge, this is a community for you, and I strongly encourage you that if you're on Facebook to join Soul Seekers, and if you're not on Facebook, hop on there just for that group. It is only going to be as powerful as we all make it. And so just remember that life happens for you. It doesn't happen to you. And that you can't outgive good. You can't outgive good, people. I want you to understand that. And I want you to believe it. Because when we believe that and we lead with courage and we lead with intention, lives are changed. Lives are transformed. Just like on this podcast, Transformation Through Primal Adventure. Be blessed. Enjoy this episode. Talk soon. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Soulful Hunter Podcast. I'm your host, Johnny Mack. Through this podcast, I'm on a mission to transform lives through primal adventure and to spread my mission of mentorship is conservation. This podcast is powered by Washington Backcountry, a resource for all hunters, both new and old. To find out more about Washington Backcountry, go to wabackcountry.com or search for Washington Backcountry on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. The Soulful Hunter Podcast is also proudly presented by the Crazy Elk Company. Based out of the state of Washington with products made in America, they are providing solutions with gear to problems you didn't even know you had. Their tag wallet is one of those solutions, and I had the pleasure of using it on all of my hunts this last year, and it is now a mainstay in my kill kit. The tag wallet is a water-resistant zippered pouch that comes with its own reusable zip ties to safely and securely store your notch tag for quick and easy access. For more information, go to crazyelkcompany.com and use the code SOULFUL with a capital S to save 20% at checkout. Be blessed, everyone, and as always, stay soulful. This podcast is also proudly brought to you by Onyx Hunt. When I first got into hunting, I kept hearing all about public land and different access and how to find different locations to hunt. I was like, well, how are people even identifying all this stuff? Well, sure enough, I came across the number one hunting GPS app, and that is Onyx Hunt. If you guys want to get better at hunting and go deeper into your scouting, Onyx Hunt is the number one GPS app for that. Join the millions of hunters who trust Onyx Hunt to find more game, discover new access, and hunt smarter. It was a game changer for me, and I know it's going to be a game changer for you if you've never used it. If you have used it, you know the power that it holds. Guys, I really hope you enjoy this episode. If you want to know more about Onyx, go to onyxmaps.com/hunt and check out their app. Be blessed, freedom on, and stay soulful. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Soulful Hunter Podcast. I'm your host, Johnny Mack, and today we are doing a story from the season, a success story of a brand new hunter and his journey of notching a tag that has been one long time coming, or maybe even short time coming, based off of what you're going to hear today. Today, I'm joined by David McDaniels from the great state of Texas. David is someone who I connected with through social media back in February as he commented on one of the podcasts I released with TJ Pace, all about hound hunting, bear hunting with hounds, I believe was the episode released back in February. Been following along with David, and here we are recording a podcast. He just returned back from the state of Montana on a spring bear hunt. We're going to hear all about that. David, how you doing, brother? Thanks for joining me. I'm
fantastic, man. Doing very well. I definitely appreciate you having me. Excited to be here.
Dude, it is always a great time to get together, record a podcast, and shoot the breeze, my man. Dude, you went to Montana on a spring bear hunt. Was that,
I did, man.
Was that just like the time of your life?
It was absolutely incredible. I mean, I've been back for a couple of weeks now, and it still feels really fresh. I had an incredible time. It's gorgeous country, man. I'd never been that far north. And they call that area Big Sky Country for a reason. It was stunning.
I love it. Well, I want to hear all about the hunt, but I actually just did my very first out-of-state spring bear hunt. Listeners, if you've been following along on this podcast for quite some time, you would know that my hunting journey is relatively newer, but I'm actually one-upped by my man David today. Because, Dave, how long have you been hunting?
My hunting journey started 2 years ago this summer, actually, just by throwing up a deer stand on some family land in Oklahoma 2 years ago.
And what was the inspiration? Why did you all of a sudden be like, I'm going to start hunting? Was it in your family? Was it what spurred it on?
Man, not at all, actually. I'm a first-generation hunter. I was born and raised. My dad's he's a northerner. I don't know if Yankee's proper or not, but he's from up north, and he was a basketball player. I was raised an athlete and took basketball really seriously for a long time. And then kind of a whole lot of things happened in my life 3 years ago, including, I went through a really heavy season of depression, anxiety, was going through a lot with my business and my personal life. Got into some therapy, and then I also got injured and hurt my knee. And my doctor told me that basketball had taken my knees and it was time for me to find something else to do. And my therapist said I needed a break. And so those things, coupled with a couple other circumstances, took me into the woods. And I really had no idea what I was getting into. And really, similarly, I think to your story, man, it's been a really transformational journey for me. It's been absolutely incredible to go from having no idea what I was doing, throwing up a deer stand right in the middle of a pasture, to becoming really passionate about both hunting and conservation, and now bear hunting. So it's been a wild ride the last couple of years.
I love it. So if you could spur or not spur, if you could put your finger on one thing that you're like, I want to hunt, what was it? Was it you just needed to get your mind off of basketball? Did you be like, I need to learn how to do some self-reliance and take care of stuff? What really hit home with you on that one?
Well, so, I mean, I grew up in East Texas. My family moved a ton. I say that I spent the majority of my formative years here. We did live in the Dallas area for a while, but I grew up around hunting culture. My little brother hunted some. I have lots of friends that hunt and fish. I grew up fishing more than hunting, and it's not like I did none of that kind of stuff as a kid. It just wasn't really a priority, just because I really thought that I was going to be a special basketball player. And so when I got older, it was something I actually started showing some interest in, just because it was something I thought that would be fun to do. I really don't even know what it was. It really just kind of became something that was available. And I've always enjoyed being outside. As I've become an adult, my wife and I have started taking some vacations, like into the mountains to do some hiking and being, you know, and outdoors. And that experience is always very reflective and really special to me. I'm a Jesus follower, so being outside, I always feel like it just makes me feel closer to the Lord. So hunting just kind of was an extension of that. And then to let you in a little deeper, I guess, that summer, the ground that I hunt on in Oklahoma belongs to my wife's grandmother, who I lovingly refer to as Granny. And her husband passed away some years back, and then her sister that lived with her passed away that summer as well. And so part of my desire to hunt was both needing something to do, wanting to be outside, something I had thought that I would enjoy. I needed a new hobby, and then it also was going to give me the opportunity to kind of be around and be there for Granny as well, since she was starting to live solo. So it kind of was just an extension of a bunch of circumstances that kind of came together all at once.
Man, I love it. So did you end up picking up a bow first or a rifle or what was the go-to?
Man, so I had no idea what I was getting into. I mean, And I also didn't know how political and how many opinions there are in regards to hunting. I was very naive kind of in all that. So when I looked at what my hunting opportunity was going to be in Oklahoma, bow hunting was a lot longer season. You know, it's, you can bow hunt in Oklahoma from October 1 to January 15th. And the rifle season there is really short. It basically lasts like 2 weeks over three weekends. So it starts one weekend, runs that weekend, the next weekend, and another weekend, like right around Thanksgiving, and it's over. So I wanted to be able to spend some more time in the woods, but I also knew that grabbing a compound bow and just trying to go after it was probably not going to allow me opportunity for like a super ethical kill, because I just didn't think I'd have the time to dedicate to master it and get comfortable. So I actually started off with a crossbow, which I know is not super popular now. At the time, I just thought it was cool, you know.
Dude, it is cool, bro. It's yeah. Come on, man. Don't hate on yourself from the get-go.
Well, no, I mean, it's like I said, I mean, at that time, I was just super excited to be outside, man. I was super excited for the opportunity to learn. And I really didn't know what I was getting into. I just thought I was going to get out there and, you know, just learn and have fun. And I primarily hunt with a compound bow now, but that first season I had a crossbow and I really enjoyed it. I killed two deer that first season and had a great time.
What were you using as your resources to learn how to hunt? Where were you going for your information at this time?
Man, so I do really love what you say about how mentorship is conservation, because one of the things that I guess kept me from being able to hunt, and really when I got to an adult age where I wanted to and started trying to, is I didn't really have anybody who was willing to teach me, and I didn't have any family who was doing it. And so, but I also, I guess, ironically, like never thought at the time to turn to the internet to learn how to hunt. That just at that particular time seemed like it wouldn't be where you would, you know, find that information. But I did. So I just, I Googled it, you know, like, hey, how to deer hunt. And I found Mark Kenyon's Wired to Hunt podcast through the Meat Eater Network. And I learned a ton about deer hunting from that, and then just trying to get out in the field and learn it. So that first season I didn't really have a lot of boots on the ground type help. There was a farmer that lives across the road from Granny's that's a career hunter, and he offered a little help, but he's become a friend, you know. But he's also like a very hardcore hunter, like, we're hunting the same deer, so I'm going to offer you a little help, but not too much help kind of thing. So, but yeah, so, I mean, once I found Mark Kenyon's podcast, I mean, he referenced being on Instagram. I actually was off social media for multiple years. And I got back on Instagram, ironically, just to start following him. And then I found a lot more hunting resources and people to follow, including yourself, you know, over the last couple of years. And so after that first year, I don't really know what changed. Maybe it's one of those things where when people see that you're willing to put in the work and get out and try to learn, after that, I really just ended up coming into some strong relationships that have really helped me over the, I guess, year or so since my first hunting season. So I have a lot of relationships now and hunting friends that I've actually been able to travel the country, obviously, now. Last year, I made friends with a couple of guys. I ended up hunting in Texas on some land I got access to, in Oklahoma on family land, and then I also made two trips to Nebraska last fall as a part of a hunt swap for some. We do a lot of hog hunting locally now on some land I've got access to. And so we swapped hunts where a farmer from Nebraska came down to hunt feral hogs with thermal rifles that we've got. And then he allowed us access to his farm to hunt whitetail. So,
dude, that sounds like a blast.
I know we're here to talk about my bear hunt, but I mean, I'm kind of an all or nothing type person. You know, when I decide to do something, I kind of jump head first in, and that's definitely been my experience with hunting. And Not only has it brought me a lot of joy personally, it's brought me a lot of time outside, which has really helped me kind of find peace again in my life as a piece of the puzzle of finding rest, but also just a ton of really cool relationships and open doors, man, that are have been really exciting to be a part of the last couple of years. So,
dude, I totally agree. 100% why I originally created Washington Backcountry was because I needed a community of support. I didn't know anyone that hunted. Well, at least I didn't know anyone that was like openly willing to support me, you know, like it's hard. Same. And so I took to social media and all of a sudden now it's like, here we are, you and I, we're going to be hunting this year together. I don't know if you know this or not yet, but David, we're going to be doing some hunt trades, just like what you're talking about. Man, brother, this is an amazing story and something that I want to get you more involved with what I'm doing. You're a soulful dude, and you're someone that is living that concept and that mission of mentorship is conservation. I really appreciate that. So one of the things, and we're going to segue here because this could be like a Joe Rogan podcast where we could keep this running and rolling forever.
I can talk about it all day.
But I want to highlight your successes. So first off, I've been hunting. Let's see here. I got my hunter safety when I turned 30. But I didn't start hunting like other than one weekend. I was coaching high school football, and I just kind of randomly go out thinking it was deer season with a modern rifle in the state of Washington. I just walked through the woods. I never even seen any animals. Well, it wasn't until 2017, so that was 5 years ago, that I shot my very first animal, which was a black bear, and that kicked off everything. So, from there, I was hooked, and it took a lot to learn. Well, I have yet to hunt out of state until this year because I didn't want to hunt out of state and be like, well, I need to figure out how to hunt my own state first before I can go to other states and pay for expensive over-the-counter tags and all this stuff. Here you are, 2 years into your journey, but coming from Texas, it's a little different. You automatically have to start looking for out-of-state tags if you want to hunt certain types of species without paying giant private land prices. So, right. So was it pretty intimidating to be like, okay, I'm going to go to Montana for spring bear? Or what was your process of going through that and breaking it down? And who were your buddies that you ended up hunting with?
Man, so it was a really interesting journey from where I started to where I ended up on this bear hunt. I actually originally was going to try to go after bear almost immediately. I told you I was kind of a big fan of the meat eater stuff. I saw Clay Newcomb on Meat Eater a couple years ago talk about hunting bears, and I was like, man, that sounds really incredible. And obviously at that point, I had only ever even thought about hunting deer. And my first iteration of a bear hunt was going to be bear in Colorado last fall, which we ended up swapping out for that, ended up not doing in lieu of that Nebraska hunt. Well, I told you we did a hunt swap with these guys from Nebraska, and they were wanting to actually start hunting bear for the first time this spring as well. And we'd become friends with them. They were actually some younger guys that were kind of in the process of inheriting some farmland and all that kind of stuff. And so they were actually younger than us. And they were like, hey, we're going to be in Montana next spring. If you guys want to come, that would be awesome. So I was like, heck yeah, man, I've been wanting to start hunting bear. That sounds perfect. And so I had committed to that trip, and then a lot of different things kind of fell through and changed. But from that time to now, through a series of pretty crazy events, I became friends with Brent Reeves from Reckless Drift Media, who has been involved with Bear Hunting Magazine for some years. He did a lot of videography and photography for Clay Newcomb, and they're just a few hours up the road from me. And I went to, this March, just a couple months ago, I went up to the Backcountry Hunters and Anglers event that they threw in Bentonville, Arkansas. And while I was at that trip, Brent introduced me to a bunch of folks, and one of those people included Colby Moorhead.
Love Colby. Awesome dude.
Colby is an incredible guy. And we hit it off. I don't know if you know, he's from East Texas. He's actually from right down the road from where I went to high school. And we're the same exact age, grew up in the same area, you know, similar core values. And we hit it off, and his kind of, as my spring bear plans were shifting, so were his. He had a hunt scheduled in Montana as well this spring that fell through. And so we just decided, hey man, let's jump in the F-250 together and we'll head north, and we're, you know, kind of thing. So so that's kind of that. It was absolutely intimidating at the beginning, just kind of trying to wrap my head around all that. But in the same way that before I did not have a mentor, all of a sudden I had somebody who had been backcountry hunting before, who had shot bear before, who had, you know, had familiarity with the area and some people in that area. And it made all the difference in the world as far as really kind of being able to get a grip on what gear I did not need, and kind of where we were going to be hunting and how that was going to flesh out. So Colby, you know, really took on myself and my hunting buddy that was local, my buddy Kelly, that had committed to going as well. And Colby also took, we actually took four guys, you know, to Montana. So it was me, Colby, Kelly, and then Colby's cousin, KD, who's also from East Texas. So he took on the mentorship role for three guys who had a total of 0 hours of boots on the ground bear hunting.
Dude, can I just pause it for a second real quick? So your spring bear hunt you just returned from, you were with Colby Moorhead?
Yes, sir.
Man, this word, I just, before, listeners, before I hit record on this podcast, I just got done telling David I do not believe in coincidences and that everything happens for a reason. Brother, I have been hearing and talking with Colby about his spring bear hunt out in Montana, and him and I have been in the talks about connecting on a hunt for this coming year as well. And here you are saying you were with Colby Moorhead from Bear Hunting Magazine, and he's also been a guest on my podcast. I'm just like, what the heck, man? I even told him I was going to write an article and make it on the cover of one of the editions coming out about my spring bear hunt. But here you are, you big stud. You might, I hear you're writing an article for this, for an edition coming up soon as well. So sorry about that. I just, dude, serendipitous. Here I am. Like, never met you in person, but the stars are aligning and all these connections are happening. I'm like, okay, see, you and I, David, were meant to be in community and connected. So I can't wait to hear more. Keep it going. Sorry about that.
No, yeah, you're totally fine. No, I mean, it really is wild, man, just the number of things that came together. And like you said, and I believe, man, I mean, I believe in that things happen with purpose, you know, and so all of these things kind of falling in line, it really is special and it really is cool and it's exciting. So we loaded up, drove 30 hours southwest Montana. I think we weren't just a whole too far from where you were hunting. You were in northern Idaho, right?
I was, without giving it away, I was more in like central Idaho. I was
sure,
close.
No problem.
Yeah,
no.
Close. No worries. I don't play that game too often anyways. I was more within a couple hours drive of Boise.
Yeah. So we shot up there. We had the luxury of really kind of being able to make that hunt whatever we wanted. Colby has some friends up there that have a cabin. And so we landed there kind of middle of the night. We left on Monday night, the 9th, got there kind of middle of the night Wednesday. We crashed a little bit. We had actually crazy weather on and off throughout the whole trip, which from what I understand is pretty status quo for what the weather has been like up in that area this spring. Everybody said it's been unnaturally cold. There's been lots of extra snow, all kinds of stuff. And we definitely had that experience. So we punched out the four of us that Wednesday afternoon to go set up camp. And man, the entire time that we were there, and I mean, you're from the north, you're from that area to where, like, I don't know, just the big skies and everything just seems, it's funny because we say everything's bigger in Texas, but I came back and literally just thought, how does the sky feel bigger in Montana than, I mean, it's the sky, you know, it's really wild. But just the landscape is stunning the whole time. But we also just had a really incredible experience. We saw bears pretty much every day, straight away. I mean, we got there. We had a 4.5 mile hike up to camp. I think we had a 1,500, a couple thousand foot elevation gain. So, I mean, it was a pretty serious hike when you got a full pack, you know, but we made the trip. But on the way up there, we immediately saw our first bear. We saw a beautiful big black bear with a cinnamon yearling cub. We watched them feed for a while on the way up. And then we got up there, got camp set up. And then we saw another bear immediately at the top of the ridge. But it was already close to like 8:30, which, here it's not staying light as long as there, but their shooting light doesn't end until like 9:30 p.m. and then the sun's right back up at 5:30. So I actually started to attempt our first stalk on a bear right away, first evening, just right after getting camp set up. We lost that bear over the ridge and in the dark, and then that night it got really cold. And we jumped up the next morning. We had some fog, so we really couldn't do a whole lot, which we had that experience multiple days where the weather was just kind of preventative as far as really allowing us to maximize what we could do. But we ended up that morning around 10:30, the first morning we were on the mountain, looked across the drainage that we were hunting. And I think you referenced it in your podcast that you did for your recap. And it was our experience too. Like everybody tells you, get up there, find a south facing slope. It's where the green up's going to be. But we saw as many or more bears on north facing slopes for our trip than we did on the south facing, which I thought was really interesting. Hmm. And sure enough, across the drainage, it was as the crow flies, that bear was, I think, a mile and a quarter or more away. But man, we saw a big, beautiful black bear. And what we now believe is the bear that I actually ended up taking on that trip. He was working right to left on a logging road. And then he kind of, we were kicking around because it was early enough to maybe try to put a stalk on him, but it was going to be a really long, really arduous stalk. And one of the things that's different about that kind of country, and, you know, it was my first experience on a hunt like that. You know, when you see that stuff on TV or on YouTube, it's really hard to get a grip on like what it would be like to actually put a stalk on an animal that you see that far away and all of the different dynamics that can change as far as where the animal is going to be, what the terrain is going to be like, how long it's going to take to get over there, et cetera, et cetera. And so it's just a different style of hunt, obviously, even than, you know, like hunting out of a saddle for whitetail, et cetera. So we didn't really feel like we were going to have the chance to put a stalk on that bear. We lost him in the timber pretty quick. And then we glassed. I mean, it's a really glass intensive trip. So we spent some time glassing throughout the day. The rest of that day, we only saw, you know, that same sow and that cinnamon cub, which I don't know. I mean, I don't know if growing up in those areas, people get used to seeing bears or if it's super common, but for this guy from East Texas, I mean, it was obviously my first time ever seeing a bear in the wild. And it's just a special thing, man. I mean, I obviously went up there. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was going to just support you on that. I 100% agree. I rarely ever see black bears or bears in general until I start bear hunting. And then I'm not saying like I'm phenomenal at that, but all of a sudden when you start to go to a location where you are like, okay, there are bears here. You see a ton of them, or at least, like, I don't want to speak so generally, but when you start to get an idea of how you do it, they start popping up all over the place. I almost feel like it's more common and easier to see bears than it is to see, like a nice buck or elk anymore. Plus, they pop out so much easier. Like, you're glassing a hillside looking for something moving that's black rather than something that blends in with the grasses and is sitting in a shadow.
You know, I've actually given that a lot of thought because it really does, even like, you know, in media, like it can really seem like, and I listened to your recap and you said it too, it really can seem kind of easier to get on bears. And I think that the difficulty of the bear hunt is really more the terrain, you know, getting up into where the bears are at, getting to the bear, you know, and then getting the bear out of there versus, you know, other animals. It's just, there's just a different challenge to every one of them. With whitetails, you can't just find them, especially if you're hunting them with a bow. You got to fool their nose to get within 20, 30, 40 yards. And you got to be able to access in and out. And those bears have good noses, but if you're playing the wind right, you know, finding the bears didn't seem like that was going to be the biggest challenge, I guess, for sure, like you said. So we glassed that Thursday. That was our first full day on the mountain. Saw that sow and that cub, which is really cool, man. We watched them feed for probably, I don't know, over an hour, if not probably more than that, which was really cool. Got back to camp, and then we had our first, like, crazy weather experience. That afternoon, the weather was super nice. It was in the 60s, and then temps shot down to the upper 20s, and we got snow overnight. And then Colby wasn't feeling well. He, I don't know if we ever figured out what was going on, but we woke up that Friday morning, and we actually ended up feeling like we needed to, we had bad weather anyway, there's fog everywhere. So we actually shot down the mountain to kind of get Colby some care, just for his body, try to get him back on track. And then we hiked back up, Friday night, and, right before last light, that night we were glassing from a little glassing knob up the ridgeline from where we were camped. And I spotted what I believe firmly was the same bear we had seen the morning before, that big bear that was, where he was working right to left still on the logging road, but he was way further to the left, like back in the corner of the drainage. And there was enough light that I considered trying to hustle up and potentially go and try and put a stalk on him, but it was going to be pretty dicey. And my hunting partner, Kelly, that I was hunting with most of the time, we had mostly split up into two groups, with Colby hunting with his cousin and me and my buddy Kelly going. He said, "Hey, man, let's just punch out first thing in the morning. Let's get an early start. We're ready for an all-day sit. We've seen that bear 2 days in a row now, and I bet we'll have a chance at him tomorrow." So that's what we did. We crashed that night. We got up super early Saturday, had breakfast, had coffee at camp. We packed our packs full for a full day sit, grabbed our stoves and all that, plenty of food. And we hiked down the ridgeline to the area where we were thinking that the bear would be if he had kind of continued down that road. And it was crazy, man. The rest of this story feels like it just happened still. Like, I can still see every bit of it. I mean, my heart could start racing really just thinking about all of it. But we got down we hiked a mile or so into the drainage, kind of in the general area where we thought the bear would be. Me and Kelly, we're really good friends. We enjoy each other's company. I mean, we have a really awesome relationship. So we were just like, "Hey, man, let's just make a day. We don't have to split up too far. We can, you know, we really have a good grip on what we're looking for and the area we're looking." So we decided we were going to kind of hang out together and just kind of make it a light day, enjoying our morning. And we got our stove set up, and we were making some extra coffee. And Kelly had asked me for some of the snacks that Colby actually had. His wife's prepped some trail mix that was really good. He's like, "Hey, throw me some of that trail mix." I was like, "Come on, man, we're trying to get on a bear." And I was just messing with him. And so I got that trail mix out, and I kind of just threw it at him flippantly. And when I did, I think it actually kind of went past him a little bit, and I turned my head back to pull up my binoculars and keep glassing, and all of a sudden he just goes, "Bear." And I was like, "What?" And I turned around, and sure enough, it sounded like he was like screaming and whispering at the same time, like in my head. Like, it just seemed like the loudest, quietest possible way that it could happen. And sure enough, a few hundred yards up that logging road was that bear still working right to left. And man, I mean, like a million things raced through my head. But it was so funny because I've been super excited about this hunt. And so even that morning, Kelly was like, "Hey, man, like when we see a bear, just stay calm. You know, like, don't get all fired up. We'll keep our bearings and, you know, and we'll get our stuff together." And then we saw that bear, and like my mind was going a million miles an hour, but I started going through my processes of like, "Hey, calm down. We have time. you know, this is a really good situation. And he was like fired, amped up, like, come on, man, we gotta go. And I was like, no, man, should I take some video? He's like, no, let's go. So we left our packs where they were at, grabbed rifles and our just binos, chest harness, rangefinder, just bare essentials. And we started the hike up the logging road to where that bear was. And a lot of factors like started coming into my head that really made the next part of the story kind of wild. I actually have already written one article for Bear Hunting Magazine. I did the Legendary Hounds article on the last edition of the magazine. I interviewed an outfitter that runs bear hounds there in Northern Idaho. And part of that story, the guy, Leon Brown, we talked, great guy, really had an awesome combo. But part of that story is he lost a dog to a failed frontal shot on a big cat. And like, he just reiterated to me, like a grandpa would hand down to his son, like, and always remember this. He's like, man, those frontal shots are no joke. And as we were rounding the corner, we were hiking up this ridge. I started thinking, man, this bear's going to be walking right at me. What am I going to do if all I have is a frontal shot? I also had just listened to a couple of podcasts on like, you know, shot placement on a bear, and listened to multiple people kind of reiterate, you know, middle of the middle, forward just a little, you know, you really want to make sure you get that good shot. Clay Newcomb had just released a video on YouTube where Giannis put a bad shot on a bear. And so, not that I was trying to focus on negative stuff, but I was really at that point just trying to hone in on what kind of shot I was going to take and what I wanted that to look like. And the situation ended up being, so we, you know, on a mountain, obviously it's not just like a clear path. There's lots of ebbs and flows where it ebbs in and out of the mountain. And so we're kind of rounding this corner on the left side of this ridge. And it was such to where the logging road kind of dips left into the mountain and then kind of loops back right around to the right. And so we round this corner and that bear was right there, probably at about 125 yards, 130 yards. And he was broadside. And one of the things I think you guys said on your podcast yesterday that I will reiterate right here is, as much as you can, if you're going to do a hunt like this and you're inexperienced, just try to get a really good grip on your gear, on every situation. You know, make sure you feel good on how exactly you're planning on, you know, taking an animal, how your bipod's going to work, what your setup's going to be. Because all of a sudden I've got a bear, you know, 130 yards from me, and it's, you take it in the moment, right? Like, it's, everything is kind of brought onto this moment. And you're also, I was like in awe of this beautiful animal. And so I start trying to get set up and my bipod starts giving me fits. And like, I'm trying to get to where to where I can get my shot the way that I want it to. And obviously right at this moment, the bear is like broadside. Well, then he kind of starts to move around and I just can't get to where I'm feeling comfortable with the shot when in the moment. And so then that bear kind of works into the dip, into the mountain, to where I can't see him anymore. And he's coming at us on this road. And so now in my head, I'm finally set up and I'm like, this bear is about to round this corner frontal. What am I going to do? And sure enough, like I'm set up, I've got my scope right on where I think he's going to land. And I'm just hoping and praying that he kind of pokes out of this corner and maybe just feeds broadside on the road like he was doing when I first saw him. But no, so he rounds the corner at like 75 yards. And I can still see it like it's happening right now. I'm looking at him through my scope and he just looks directly at me and Kelly. And I couldn't help but even just feel like in the moment, like, this is so different from anything I've ever done. Because, well, it's like you can see the bear thinking about what he's going to do versus any other animal I hunt in this area. The second they see you or think, sense any kind of threat, they are gone. You know, a whitetail is going to turn and run immediately. A hog is going to run, coyote. I mean, anything that we, you know, that I'm hunting in East Texas, there's no like thought process or, you know, but this guy just looks like he's king of the mountain. Like he's going to decide what's going to happen next, kind of thing. And And I'm nervous about this frontal shot. I'm like, man, I don't want to take this shot. And my buddy Kelly's right behind me, and he's going, shoot him, shoot him, shoot him, shoot him. He's like, come on, it's fine. And I had already, we had been talking about like, man, I don't want this frontal shot. And so, man, I was nervous and I didn't like my shot. And he was telling me to shoot. And so I shot anyway, but I missed. I mean, I pulled my shot just in a hurry because I was, you know, just wasn't feeling.
Yeah.
But that bear did not move. I'm at 75 yards. I shoot at this bear and miss off to the right, like high right. And he just stood there. And I racked another round and Kelly said, David, just take the shot. It's fine. And so I point it right at his chest and I go to squeeze off. And just again, man, it just seemed like the Lord just worked it out for me, because as soon as I went to pull that trigger, that bear started to turn around. I cracked off a round right at him and he turned just to where that bullet, he was basically, I guess, broadside or right at broadside when he turned and I shot, because it double lunged him. And he literally just kind of tried to scoot and he fell dead right there.
Wow.
So he ended up tumbling down the mountain and again, and what could have been a huge challenge. There was literally just like a bear sized crevice about 60 yards down that from that logging road, to where if he hadn't have got snagged right there, he literally would have tumbled. I don't even know how far, but he literally just kind of fell into this little crevice that had a log sticking out that prevented him from rolling over the log. And he was right there.
Wow. So, did you get to hear him death moan?
I did not, but I had earplugs in. And so I don't know if that was preventative for that. But I was concerned because I knew that he had kind of started to move about the shot. But after we reviewed the film and all that, he just, like I said, he ended up being, it hit him right behind the shoulder, right, went through both of his lungs. And it was pretty crazy.
Awesome. So have you eaten any of the meat yet?
Man, I have. Yeah. So I actually haven't prepared any of the backstraps yet. I had a little bit of summer sausage made. It turned out delicious. I've had some of the ground, and we're probably going to do some fried backstraps next couple of days at the house. So
did you mix it with your hogs that you're shooting down there in Texas, or what
did I?
Yeah, for your sausage, are you going to mix it up with some whitetail and some hog and do a wild game mix?
Man, so I do have the pleasure of having a couple friends that when they're available, they've got the processing stuff. I ended up having to take him to a processor just for the sake of time and being able to get that facilitated. So I'm a father of two and a business owner, and I was gone for 9 days out of town.
There's a lot of stuff going on. Did you guys drive up there or did you fly up there?
We did drive, yeah. So which for me, I lived the furthest south, so I had the furthest drive. So I ended up picking up Kelly and then going and picking up Colby and KD. And so it was about 30 hours for me of driving. Wow. As far as in the truck.
Wow. I'm going to Utah this year for archery elk, and I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to get my elk meat back. Because I'm thinking about flying in. I'm like, I wonder how much it costs to ship meat and to make sure it's still good, especially that much. Dude, did the bear have any fat on it? Was there any on the bear in the springtime?
So it was one of those things where kind of everything felt like the exception to the rule, man. It was almost just, like you said, it was serendipitous. The whole thing, just the way it all came together, the bear had way more fat on it than anybody would have guessed. Everybody says a spring bear is going to be really lean. We were able to grab a decent amount of fat off of him. He was a really beautiful color phase bear. He was like a dark chocolate, the big white crest on his chest. He was a mature boar. In Montana, you have to take your bear to a check station with Game and Fish. They pull a tooth for aging and just do an inspection of the hide and check the sex of the animal. And so the guy just said that it was like a once in a lifetime type bear. You know, he squared 6'5", which apparently is a really
good size bear. That's a big black bear. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't feel guilty, but like there was at least a measure of just like, man, like somebody who's been doing this their whole life would probably at least in the moment have been able to really more fully appreciate all that that animal was. And, you know, it was obviously incredibly special to me. I mean, he's just beautiful.
That's awesome.
He was really cool, scarred up. He had some kind of scar on his hide where it looked like he'd been in a fight with a bear, a mountain lion, and his teeth were pretty wore out. I mean, he was just an old warrior of an animal. So
awesome.
Really cool.
Awesome. Did you get a chance to render down any fat and cook some tenderloins in the bear fat on the hunt? That is my ultimate goal of every bear hunt is get some fat, render it in the jet boil, cook those tenderloins, little nuggets, and a little salt and pepper, and you're golden.
So that was fully an intended part of the plan. But we ended up having a really long day quartering up and hiking down that bear. And we had to do a bunch of – it was really wild. It was a pretty involved process. We had a 4.5-mile hike back to the truck with full packs. We already had full packs, like, because we were going in for an all-day sit, and then we added bear meat and the hide, and we had to do some side hilling to make it not like a 6 or 7 mile hike from where we were at, and everybody was pretty wore out, and so instead of we hiked the bear. We were really blessed, man. So the people that we had access to their cabin there, they had a walk-in cooler. And so we felt like the best course of action was just going to kind of get everything back to the truck and then get the bear and the meat and all that squared away. And so we actually did make a little pouch of fat and some backstrap or tenderloin to take back up to camp with us when we went back up the next day, and then we ended up forgetting it. So,
all right.
I was, man, I mean, I that really was like something that I wanted to do. It was something I had in mind as just a way to really just solidify the experience. But I guess I'll have to, maybe next time I go with you, we'll have to make that a thing.
That's what I'm talking about. There we go. There we go. One, if I could offer my favorite wild game meal is teriyaki. Teriyaki.
Okay.
Take your favorite teriyaki sauce and you marinate some backstrap in. I marinate it for like a week, but you at least 24 hours, whatever. And then I'm sure you, being a Texas boy, you got yourself some sort of Traeger or Green Mountain or something like that to cook on. I'd imagine.
Yes,
I'm assuming. I'm making an assumption right there. you take that backstrap and you cut it up in little thin, you know, teriyaki strips, and you smoke it. Or you cook it, and oh my gosh, you make some white rice, make some greens, all that, and you're gonna have yourself the best meal you'll ever have. And
that sounds fantastic. My son, that's something my wife would really enjoy as well.
Oh,
that's always a win.
I love it. Well, what are you gonna do with the rug? You gonna actually rug it out? You gonna just do a wall hanger? You gonna do a full body mount? What do you got planned?
Man, so I kicked around. I mean, I originally had my intentions on getting a rug. And then after taking that bear, I mean, basically everybody that I talked to on Instagram, I think you're friends with Douglas Bowes. He actually was really helpful too as I was prepping for my trip. He answered a bunch of questions for me. You know, he reached out and was like, man, that's a once in a lifetime bear. Multiple people who are way more experienced than me said, man, whatever you do, just make sure you're going to feel great about it, because you might never kill a bear that big again. So instead of doing a rug, he had that beautiful white crest on his chest. I decided to do a half mount. I actually was going to do a full mount. I just really don't have anywhere to put it at this exact juncture in life. And so I felt like something I could hang on the wall that would still display that crest on his chest would be really cool. And I could put that here in my office. And then we're going to do just like a throw fur with the back half. And I think the rear claws I'm going to take and have some little jewelry made for my kids, and maybe some of their friends or something. So
love it. Love it. David, this has been such a wonderful podcast, brother. I really appreciate it. I can't wait till I get to shake your hand and give you a hug and welcome you to the family. And
I'm excited about that too.
Brother, we got some adventures that I Just wait till we're going to have to stop recording and we're going to talk off air for a little bit. Guys, everyone, if you have not gotten a chance to see David's bear, go to social media. David, what's your Instagram account where people can see a lot of the pictures from your hunt?
East Texas Camo. That's East spelled out and then just TX and CAMO.
So. Awesome. And then you said that it was filmed. So you plan on putting this on YouTube or what's this going to be a part of?
Man, so I'm not fully in the loop on that as of yet. We did take a decent amount of photos and videos, and Colby is actually in charge of how that ends up fleshing out. So
awesome.
We'll have to look for that at a future date.
I love it. I love it. Well, how can people connect with you? Is it Instagram the best way?
Instagram, I'm on Facebook, just David McDaniels. Either one of those is totally great. And I'm definitely more than willing to, you know, if anybody has any questions who's wanting to try backcountry hunting or anything like that. I mean, I went through a ton of research on gear and obviously we had a really solid trial run while we were up there with all the different weather variations. And we had a storm blow in one night too with 40 mile an hour winds and my tent held up well. So anything I can do to be helpful, you know, just like you, Johnny, I mean, I'm here for it. You know, the hunting community is already, I feel like, given me so much and my heart is definitely to sow that forward. So
beautiful. Well, you can't outgive good. You can never outgive good. And I think you and I both had articles in the last edition of Bear Hunting Magazine. I never got a copy of it, but if you got an extra, I might have to come snag that from you when I come visit you in Texas.
Make that real.
I love it. I love it. All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for tuning into today's episode. David, you are a boss. Thank you. God bless you. Good luck. What plans do you have coming up this fall? Anything out of state, like big epic adventure, or are you going up to Grammy's place?
Man, I'm kicking around doing a fall bear hunt in Colorado currently. Bear is something that, for whatever reason, just really gets my blood flowing. It's a lot of fun. I really enjoy the backcountry stuff. Whitetail will always be, you know, a part of what I'm doing. I've got access to some local farms here in Texas to hunt. And then obviously we've got that family land in Oklahoma. And it's what I cut my teeth on and hunting, and it'll always be something I enjoy. So that's always part of the equation.
Absolutely. I love it. All right, guys, thanks for tuning in to today's episode. This podcast is powered by Crazy Elk Company and Onyx Hunt. Go get yourself an Onyx subscription and a tag wallet. Add it to your collection. I'm Johnny Mack. Thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode. Be blessed, freedom on, and as always, stay soulful. If you enjoyed today's podcast, I'd love it if you could go ahead and give this a rating as well as subscribe. Also, you can check us out on Instagram under the Soulful Hunter Podcast. Make sure to tag us in pictures and posts and use the hashtag Soulful Hunter. To find out more about the Soulful Hunter Podcast, go to soulfulhunter.com. And be sure to follow the podcast as we are going to be bringing you a lot of great information, insight, and changing lives through primal adventure. I look forward to connecting with you on the next episode. Stay tuned and stay soulful.